Okay, towards the top of Ayin Beis Amud Aleph, Ayin Beis Amud Aleph 72A. Tana Rabbanan, a lot of rabbis, a ton of them. A ton of Rabbanan.
2,000.
Yisrael Shalava Maos Menanachri Beribis. A Jew who borrowed money from a non-Jew with interest. Uzakafana Love the Milve. And after a while, he decided together to make it into one big loan, meaning to transform the interest into the loan itself?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What does that mean? He took more money from the...
No. He had borrowed $1,000. Now, because right. of the interest, the Jew owes him $1,200. So they make right. it a new loan for $1,200 rather than saying, you owe me $1,000 principal and $200 interest. Now they make it a loan for $1,200.
I get that, but practically that...
You're going to see in a minute why it's...
I know what's coming up. I'm just saying, practically, how do you make it into a loan without actually giving him the extra $200? Just say you owe it to him?
Yeah.
You already owed it to him by the 1,000 part.
Just saying,
a matter of phrasing?
Yeah,
this is a loan as opposed to interest?
Yeah, right.
Okay. I don't hear it, but... all right. I guess they rewrite the contract, maybe. Vinis Gayer. And then the non-Jew becomes Jewish. So now the Yisrael is ushered to take the ribbis.
To pay the ribbis.
Im kodem shinis gayer. Is a kafan of that if they had made it into a loan before he had converted. So in Govas, the Karen of Govas ribbis, he's allowed to take what was originally ribbis, as long as his conversion happened afterwards. If he transformed the loan, the ribbis into the loan, the principal, so then after he converted, Govas the Karen and Govas the ribbis, they can collect the Karen. So it's all about when he converted relative to the change. And so too, a non-Jew borrows from a Jew, and then you made it into a loan in his gayer. Im adshol in his gayer is kafal b'milve, goves hakerem v'goves haribis. It goes both ways. Im mishen is gayer is kafal b'milve, goves hakerem v'en goves haribis. Again, same exact thing, just in the other direction, about who takes the loan versus gives the loan, and whether it happens before or after the conversion. Rabbi Yossi Omer, nach yishalav amals mi'yisrael b'ribis, Bainkach, Goves Akem, Goves Haribis. You're allowed to do that? Does that mean Jews can do that? I guess it depends how you consider the chalos of ribis. But Amarava, Amarav Chista, Amarav Huna, Halach Rabbi Yossi, Pasuk Rabbi Yossi, Amarava, Maitamid Rabbi Yossi, Kitesh L'Yom Ribishvil Ma'osav, Niskayer Zeh. We don't want people, you know, converting so that they can charge interest.
So they can avoid interest.
So he can avoid...
This is very problematic. He converted or he didn't convert. If he converted, then the Jew is not allowed to collect interest. And we shouldn't care what anybody says. The Torah forbids
to
collect interest.
Well, that's the first opinion, which is that your conversion has to be done before any interest is considered. Or unconsidered. Eliminated... Transferred.
We only have Rabbi Yossi.
We passing like Rabbi Yossi.
Rabbi Yossi.
That you could always do it.
Is only the second version where the non-Jew borrowed money from the Jew.
No, Rabbi Yossi said both ways.
He's both ways, but...
Well, I guess that's unclear.
What's the first opinion for the second case? The first opinion for the second case. Our first case...
The first opinion said in both directions.
The first opinion was in both directions.
Okay. Yeah. Rabbi Yossi didn't actually say in both directions.
When he says Bangkok with Bangkok, is he talking about...
Yeah, he's talking about the gear.
After,
Before or after. Okay. So in that case, he's only talking about a non-Jew borrowing from a Jew with ribbis, and then saying regardless of when you transformed it into a full loan as opposed to a loan with ribbis, regardless of which happened first, it's still okay because we don't want the non-Jew, we don't want him to leverage the situation by converting.
Again, if he's a convert, it's forbidden by the Torah. I mean, regardless of you know, what the appearances are. I don't understand how you could have such an opinion. The Torah forbids them to collect interest.
No,
I don't know what you mean. The,
no,
the,
David's
the
point
transforming is happening.
But if the transforming happens after the guy is Maguire, okay?
Yeah.
So then at the time the guy was Maguire...
Yeah, no, that's Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi's changing something, right? He has a difference of opinion, right? Yeah. Rabbi Yossi does not want the non-Jew to only transfer it into a loan for the sake of conversion.
I understand that, but who cares about his motivations?
No, I think it's the other way around. I think it's he doesn't want the non-Jew to convert in order to avoid paying interest.
To the Jew, and my point is, he converted for whatever reason, assuming this is a valid conversion.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the Jew collecting interest from a Jew. Assuming it's a valid conversion.
Well, why don't we assume that it's a valid transforming?
In which case?
It's not ribbis.
If it's not a valid transforming, then it's...
No, it is.
No, but he transformed it after he was Maguire.
I know. So, I mean, I think, David, your point is that if he's a sincere conversion candidate, so we should accept him and we should charge him as ribbis.
In other words, it can't be collected.
Right. My point is, why don't we assume that he's being sincere about the transforming of the money?
But the transforming occurred after he converted.
Right, but from Rabbi Yossi, it sounds like a person could do this. That you could be over the issur of charging ribbis, but then also not over the issur of collecting ribbis if you transformed it. It's like sounds like something you could do. We haven't seen this concept before, but it sounds like you could avoid the collection of ribbis or the paying of ribbis by sincerely transferring it into a loan. Now, you might already be on the hook because you accepted it at the beginning. We haven't talked about the chalos of ribbis. When is this person held accountable for it? But it sounds like, according to Rabbi Yossi, a person could do that.
Rabbi Yossi does not say he has to pay because he sincerely transferred it into a loan. He says he's off the hook because...
No, that's why he makes no distinction. That's why he says we make no distinction. But you could do that. I mean, that's the implication of the first part. The implication of the first part is that even if it's before conversion, it's fine because
both
it works.
Well,
it's a real
conversion,
thing.
Before conversion, we're not questioning. The question is, why is it that...
Valid after conversion.
Right. My point is that it's something the person can do. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a starting point. The question is whether you're going to be held liable for it. And he's saying that we shouldn't hold him liable for it. We'll assume that it's a real thing, so that he doesn't use it as a leverage point for his conversion, which would be insincere. I think Rabbi Yossi, the way I'm reading it, is that Rabbi Yossi is more trusting
of the person. In which case, Rabbi Yossi's rule should be any time a Jew lends another Jew money.
Correct. That's what I think. Yeah. It always works.
It always works. And he illegally...
He might have done something wrong at the beginning.
Interest, and then they say, oh, that interest, let's just convert it
yeah,
into a...
Yeah, they felt bad about it, and they changed their ways, yeah.
They felt bad about it, so let's go forward with enforcing it with a new name.
Correct. That's why I thought the whole thing was weird. I think the whole thing is weird. But I think if it's a shita, then it works for both.
But then in which case, yeah. Why is he questioning his motives for conversion? He should just say it works. Instead of saying I'm questioning it,
I don't know. I don't know. We got to keep moving, but it's an interesting case. Tan Rabbanan shtach shekasuv bo ribbis kontzinoso. A document that says on it that it has ribbis konsinoso, we punish the lender once he violated it. V'eino gova los ken los ribbis, meaning you're already in violation the second you declare that this is a loan with ribbis that's going to charge ribbis, and he's not allowed to collect anything. Dibur Rabbi Meir, v'chamrom gova sekaren v'eino gova ribbis, he stole the Karen can still be collected. Rabbi Meir says, we will extend the punishment beyond just the Isser part, but to also remove the Mutter part, the Karen. Rabbanan Sabri lo kantinan heteri mishum isura. This sounds like a general rule. Do you remove something which is mutter because of something which is aser? Tanan hasam.
But don't we for sure do that? I mean, the guy who steals and now has to pay kefil, we're removing something that he had legally in order to pay the kefil part. Right? I owned one cow. I stole a cow. Now I have to pay him back two cows. So we're taking back the cow that I took illegally, and we're also taking away from me the cow that I had legally.
Yeah, but that's not legally owed. That both of those cows are illegitimately gotten.
No. I had a cow that I owned legally. Perfectly.
I hear you. But it's not a loan in the sense that
no, but if he's getting the cow. We don't.
My point is that it's not like a hetera in the sense that he did something to get that second cow.
I stole a cow that's from a you fee. And I bought a cow from you.
Right, that would be a similar case. That would be a similar
but
case.
I still am going to have to pay kefil on the cow I stole.
It wouldn't be the one that you bought. You could pay it with any cow. We're not paying, we're not.
Well, I can pay this with any money.
Yeah, that's true, but that's because the money is liquid. I don't know. Tanan Hasan, let's keep reading, see if there are some more common examples. Shtari Chov HaMukdamin, loans that are predated. Psulin, so then you can't use them. HaMukharin, that are post-dated. Ksherin, those you can use. Mukdamin HaMai Pozon, why is the predated a problem? Nihi DeLo Gavim Mizman Rishon, Nigvu Mizman Cheni. Why can't they use the document for the later date, for the real date?
The seizure can't be made by means of them from an earlier incorrect date, like Kushinath seizure a state for repayment.
Right. I'm Rabbi Shimon Lakish, v'machlokas shnuya, Rabbi Meir hi. That's machlokas, and it's really according to Rabbi Meir, that's kones heter mishum isura. Meaning that Rabbi Meir, the one who says you can't even collect the principal, will also say you can't even use this loan document for the date of when it was effectuated, as opposed to the date that's written on the document. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, afilu tim Rabbanan. Even according to Rabbanan, it'll be a problem. Gzer Shema, Yigbe Mizman Rishon, we're worried that someone's going to use it. Meaning, yeah, it's true, we are eliminating even the heter part of it, meaning the date that it was transacted, but the reason is because of a separate gezer, not because we're punishing the heter, but rather we're worried about the iser. Hu gaver demashkin le pardeso lechavrei, he had deposited as a collateral a vineyard for a friend on in exchange for the loan. Achla tlas shane, and the lender who now had this vineyard had eaten from it for 3 years. Amarle im izabnis la nieli. If you agree to sell it to me, meaning as opposed to just letting me have it as a collateral, so muta vilo. And if not, if you don't agree to sell it to me, kavishna lashlashtar mashkanta, I will hide the collateral document, and I will just tell people that I bought it from you.
And if you claim, and since I've been eating the fruit for the past 3 years, people.
There's a chazaka. At least a practical chazaka. I don't know if there's a halacha chazaka, but. Azal. So then the borrower, who's now being manipulated or exploited, Azal, come akmi.
Isn't it more coerced?
I guess so. I don't know. Is exploitation
that sounds more like coercion than manipulation?
I guess that's true. Come Akdiye Livno Katan. He went to his younger son.
He gave it as a gift to his younger son, to his minor son.
Vahadar Zabna Niale. And then sold it to the lender without telling him that he already gave it as a gift to his son. So the Gemara says, Zvine vade lo have zvine. It's clear that the Sale doesn't work.
Because he doesn't own it anymore.
Because it's not his. It belongs to the son. Zuze kamilve b'shtar damu. And the money... What money?
I think he sold it. He sold it. It doesn't say here he gave it as a gift. He sold it to him with, I don't know what purchase money, but.
I think it just means he acquired it or bequeathed it.
It sounds like he can't sell it because.
No, it's not his. He sold it now to the lender. Remember?
He sold it in act of selling.
What you're talking about is the purchase money. Right.
Yeah. From the lender to the borrower. Who is now trying to buy? Who thinks he's buying the field?
Right.
So that's kamilve b'shtar damu, because it says on the shtar that they're selling the vineyard.
Well, this is asking a question.
It's unclear how we're going to say this. Is it not a sale, and the money converts into a loan? V'gove minchas mishubadim, and therefore, the loveh is not. If the loveh is unable to pay off the loan that he had originally, so then goveh minachas mishubadim, then the lender can go and take his lien properties from the loan. Odilma kamilval pedamu v'eno goveh minachas mishubadim. Okay. The original, are we talking about the money that the lender is giving to the borrower in his mind for the sake of buying the field?
Right.
We're saying that now that's considered a loan because the borrower gave him nothing.
Yeah.
He gave him nothing, did not give him an actual vineyard since it already belonged to the son. So now we're saying it's actually a loan, unbeknownst to the lender. And the question is it a loan that's like written or is it a loan like that's spoken? Because maybe we're basically saying, does the shtar mean nothing? Does the shtar mean nothing because the shtar was not written for a real thing? It's falsified. It's not falsified. It's just speaking to false events. But the big difference is if you consider the shtar a real thing, so then you can collect from lien properties that are written on the shtar or for the sake of the shtar. But if it's a milval peh, if the shtar means nothing and would consider it like just a verbal agreement, so then you can't collect for lien properties. So Amar Abaye, the lav hainu de Rabbi Yasi, is this not the case of Rabbi Yasi? Amar Rabbi moda b'shtar shehuk shek savo eno tzarech l'kaimo. If a person agrees that it's a real shtar, if the borrower agrees that the shtar is real, so you don't need to substantiate it, v'goveh minachas mishubadim. So if the loveh says, basically, I paid it off, it was a real loan, and I paid it off. And the malveh says, no, you didn't. So then the malveh, because the loveh said it's a real shtar, and it was a real loan, he does not have to bring any substantiation to the shtar itself. He can just collect even from lien properties or properties that can be collected from. Okay.
I don't understand the comparison, but Rav is going to not like it either. So
I think it's basically saying that from the Lova's perspective, it's not a great shtar, and the malva, and we don't care. And the malva is still allowed to collect in the best way. Over there, in the case of the love, who agrees that it was written, nitan li kasev. Is this a rhetorical question?
No. There it was supposed to be written, or at least it could have been.
There was a real loan, right, and it was really written. So the shtar is kosher. It's just a question of whether it can be collected from. Here, the shtar in the first place should never have been written. It's for a fake transaction. Yasiv mereimar v'kamar lahashmaita. Amar le'ravina le'meimar ela hada amar Rabbi Yochanan gezer Hashem yigbe mizman rishon ne'emesh lo nitan likasev. Why don't we say about the previous case that Rabbi Yochanan explained that it even works with the Rabbanan that why don't we say it's not a problem of Gezeirah Shem Yigveh Mizman Rishon. It's a problem that it should never have been written in the first place. And therefore, the shtar is like it doesn't exist. And therefore, he can't collect from the Chasam Shibadim. So Amar Lei, Hach Yashta, Hasan Hidol Nitan Likasam Yizman Rishon, Aval Nitan Likasam Yizman Sheni. There was a document that should have been written. It should not have been written with a predating that they did. But the second is Hach Lo Nitan Likasam Klal. It should never have been written at all. The one with the vineyard. Elohad D'Tanya says the Gemara, what about the following verse? L'shvach Karkos Ketzai. What does that mean, L'shvach Karkos?
The Gemara is going to explain.
What is this case of L'shvach Karkos? Harei Shegazal Sadem Echaver Amachar La'acher. You stole a field, you sold to somebody else. V'ishbicha, and that field improved, or was improved. The person who bought the field from, I don't know, the fence.
The thief.
So he made the field better. And after a while, the field is taken back.
Yeah. The court
does it.
The court now
forces the buyer to give back the field to the one it was stolen from. Kshehu gove sakerim nechas mishibadim. So when he collects the principal, he collects it from lien properties. V'shevach goveh minechas minechorin. And the extra can only be taken from non-lien properties. Okay, name aloni tanlika. So we're saying name aloni tanlikasev. Why don't we say that shtar doesn't work at all? Because that shtar was also written under false pretenses. The thief wrote a shtar for a field that wasn't his, just like the guy wrote a shtar for the vineyard for a field that wasn't his to sell to the malva anymore. So Gemara says, Hach yashta, hasam, in the case of the stolen field, ilman d'amar nichale d'lo nikri gazlana, ilman d'amar nichale d'lekem behemunuse, mefais l'lamar ilmokin le'lishtare. The thief is going to try to repair his reputation first and say, either because he doesn't want to be a gazlan or because he wants to, you know, maintain his trustworthiness, he's going to make it right with the shtar. He's going to fulfill the conditions of the shtar with this buyer. He wants to make it good by him. Even if the shtar is no good in terms of the fact that he didn't own it in the first place, he's still going to sort of be beholden to the shtar. But hacha, The whole point of the shtar with the guy who sold it to the child already, the whole point of that shtar was la'avruch minei kamechavein. He was using the shtar as a means of escape from the whole ordeal. So shtar mekayim lei. So basically, it's all about how nefarious the actual shtar is. In the end of the day, it's not about whether or not the shtar is usable or represents reality. It's really just about the guy was using the shtar to manipulate the lender, right? He was using it in a way to misrepresent what he was really doing. And that's why the shtar was never good. Even the gazlan, when he wrote the shtar, really meant it. He really meant to give a shtar and to sell the piece of land. It's just he couldn't do it because the reality was he wasn't the owner of the land. Okay. Mishnah, ein poskan al peros. You can't. I think we've been sort of using this concept before in a few different ways, but now we're finally saying it in a Mishnah. A person cannot pay for fruit that don't yet belong to him, or that don't yet have a price. Is that what we're talking about? You don't have the fruit yet. Does the fruit exist? I'm wondering if we're. I don't think we're talking about davar shelo balola. I think we're talking about a davar shalabal or shuso or something. You can't pay for fruit that haven't come yet or that you're not going to collect yet because the market price changes. And we're worried that the money that you gave originally is going to be considered like a loan and the seller of the fruit is going to give you back fruit that are more than what you paid.
More than what you lent and what you paid, right?
and therefore the fruit will be considered like ribbis. You're getting an extra apple for what you paid. Ashiyitzeshar, until the price comes out. Okay. Yatza Shar poskin afli she'en lazeh yesh lazeh. Once the price comes out, I assume there's some kind of longevity to that price. It's going to stay that way. So then you can the afal pi she'en lazeh yesh lazeh.
No, the afal pi she'en lazeh yesh lazeh. Because even though this person doesn't have the produce in stock, couldn't deliver it today, somebody else does. We've said that before. I mean, we've quoted this before.
And therefore what? I remember talking about the actual physical produce. That was that confusing Mishnah where they swapped wine for wheat or whatever it was.
Right. Because since I could have gotten it for this price from him, I could get it for this price for you, even though you're going to...
Why are we not still worried about when he gets it? That the price might change?
According to the note, the concept of a prevailing price comes later in the harvest. In other words, so this is like some sort of settled, okay, it was a good harvest.
Or so that's what I was wondering. So, the price is like determined for the season. That kind of thing?
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah, later.
So he's got to get his fruit at some point in that season. And by that time, the price is not going to change.
Right. So maybe it's not so much about the prevailing price. It's about knowing that the fruit sort of exists by that point.
Right, because that's going to be the consistent going rate now that there are fruit available. We have determined that. As opposed to sort of like, you know, at the beginning of the season saying, okay, last year the apples were worth $100, I'll pay you the same thing this year. That's not true because maybe that season's apples are going to be paid worth different. It's very hard to wrap your head around it because we don't function like this anymore. Last week my daughter wanted a watermelon even though they're out of season, and I paid $7 for a watermelon. I'm like, that's $3 I'm not getting back, you know? Because things fluctuate all the time. Every week you go to the store, avocados are another dollar or something. Hayahu tzchila l'kotrim, if he was the first one to get to the harvesting, so posik yimo al hagadish, you can still make the price because you have the food in hand, even if it's cheaper, and it might cause an imbalance or unparalleled pricing, al hagadish. But you only basically pay for the heap. How do you say this?
You can enter into a contract with him on a stack of grain that he has in his possession.
Right, the stack.
You're not going to deliver it right away.
V'al ha'avid shal hanavim, and for the collection of grapes, the vat. I don't know. The al hama'atan shel zeisim, also some kind of vat where you collect the olives.
Even though right now he doesn't have the wine that you're going to buy from him, but since he
still has the physical
grapes,
stuff which is going to create the wine,
or the
eggs shel yotzer. What does that mean?
Potter's clay balls.
They always make the clay into a ball before putting it on the...
So not actual eggs,
Not actual eggs.
Yal hasid mi sheshik o bakivshan, and plaster which wasn't yet kilned.
Right.
So all of this stuff is unprocessed, but because you have the materials already, you can already charge for it. Uposik himo azevel al klemos hashana, and you can charge for fertilizer the whole year round. Reb Yossi Omer ein poskin al zevel, ela im ken ha'yisalo zevel ba'ashpa v'chal matirim. What does that mean? I guess what it's saying is zevel is the kind of thing which you just, it's there, I guess, in the animal. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, manure is an item in some constant abundant supply all year round. Therefore, one may contract for it because even though the seller does not have any in stock at the time, since he has the animals
he has the working material. It's like the wheat that you haven't processed yet. Okay, and the Rabbi Yossi says, no, the inevitability is not enough. It has to actually exist in the ashpa, in the garbage heap. Posik imo b'shar ha'gavoa.
So I'm a little confused.
Posik imo b'shar ha'gavoa.
So Rabbi Yossi says you can't do it.
For fertilizer.
All right. And the Chachamim say you can't. Okay.
Uposek yimo b'shar hagavoa. And you're allowed to charge the higher price? In all these cases, a person is allowed to charge a price. What does it mean, shar hagavoa? Shar HaGavoa sounds like the more expensive price, right?
Mm-hmm. When there exists a prevailing price or when the seller has the goods, a forward contract is permitted and the seller can later deliver the produce even if its price has decreased in the interim.
Okay. We're basically saying we're not worried about the price changing and therefore overcharging or something. This sounds more like Ona than it does Riva's question. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afal pi shelo pasak imo b'shar hagavoa. What do you have?
The high price is the price at the height of the market when the commodity is cheap. After fixing a price, the vendor may contract the supply stock throughout the year at the lowest price prevailing at the time of each delivery. Thus, the first price fixed is only to be regarded as a maximum, not to be exceeded if the market price advances. I mean, that seems very counterintuitive, but...
So once you set that price, you can't charge more than that?
You can't charge more than that.
Even if the market goes up. Okay. I don't know how that works with the words shar gavoa.
I don't understand.
Posek imo bishar hagavoa means that's the greatest price you can do for that. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afa bishalo posek imo bishar gavoa, yachol omar tein li kazeh, o tein li esma osai. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda basically says you can change. Even though he had given a market price, and now we're saying that that's the maximum he's allowed to charge, or that's the maximum relative to what the price is going to become. So he could still say, the buyer could still say to the seller, give me based on the cheaper price, or give me my money back. Okay, we'll talk about that in the Gemara, hopefully. Am Rabbi Yasi, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Ein Poskin Al Hashar Shebashuk. You shouldn't. What? You can't pay originally. Poskin again always means paying it beforehand. If there is.
On the basis of a current market price, it's saying.
Because the seller doesn't have the item?
No, because the price is likely to fluctuate and doesn't qualify as a prevailing.
Okay, so
price.
The shuk is different than what we were talking about in the Mishnah?
This seems to be the ideal, that you can do it at whatever is the current market price.
I think this is what I'm saying, even though there is a market price, the person doesn't have the goods. But why is that different from what the Mishnah said?
So
maybe it's disagreeing.
Gemara is going to try to clarify.
Okay. Amar le Rabbi Zeir le Rabbi Yasi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, afil kedormus hazeh. What is that, like a specific kind of food?
Rabbi Yochanan means to say that even an established price like that of the central market.
Oh, like Dormos, I guess. It's like very
located in a large city, produce is sold in large.
The guy's name is the Roman god Mercurius, the divinity of commerce.
But the point is that it's a consistent price.
To whom a great fair
right.
is dedicated. Entirely.
All right, interesting. Amarle, lo amar Rabbi Yochanan ela b'shuk shel ayaros. He's only talking about cities where it changes, to lo kvi tarayhu, and therefore the price changes. Ulamai desalik adatin meikara. Ulamai the salik adatin meikara.
Is your saying Ulamai or Laman?
I have Ulaman in parentheses, Ulamai in brackets.
Oh, okay.
Ulaman the salik adatin meikara. Dam Rabbi Yochanan afil kedormus hazeh elamas nisne ketani ein poskin al peres ashiets ashar yatz ashar poskin heichim shkachas like. That was my question. So how could the Mishnah happen if Rabbi Yochanan's of the opinion that you can't even give a psak based on the market price, even if other people, presumably if there's a market price, other people have the item. So, masnisin bechite da'achal be'arve. The Mishnah is referring to wheat, which is...
of the storehouse and ships.
Which are already being sold, I guess.
The next thing it says.
Tare tfei.
So that price is more stable.
Mashuch means it extends. Okay, interesting. As opposed to other produce, which fluctuates. Okay, so basically, it's back to our original understanding that if there is something that fluctuates, so you have to be worried about this unless you have the produce itself. Even if somebody else has that produce, because that price can change. So that's the Mishnah. Hayu chadashos me arba v'hayishanos mi shalosh ein poskin. If there is wheat that's new that wasn't yet dried out, and they're sold 4 sa to the seller, but the old ones which are dried out are cheaper. Or no, they're more expensive. I guess they're fully processed, maybe. So then they're only sold 3 sa to the seller. Ein poskin. You can't sell the future of the 4 to the seller, the newer ones. Because then they're going to dry out. They're going to be...
And you don't know what those are going to be worth once they dry out.
Right. Or they're going to be worth more.
Well, no, they will be worth more. Because I think the dried out ones...
Okay, the poskin here means you shouldn't pay for the three price for the 4 priced... new ones right now. Ashes Hashal Kharish Aliyashan. Hayulukutos me arba ulchol adam mishalosh. The ones that the poor people collect, they can be sold for a cheaper price because they're, you know, roped into other things. Or a bunch of different fields, I think. Ulchol adam and everybody else who's selling, you know, their own wheat is sold at 3, which is a cheaper price, which is a more expensive price. In poskin achiesa shalolokid v'lamocher. Basically, the price for the same good, which has different applications, you also have to wait to sell until the market price of when you're selling it or when you have it, I guess. Because you don't know, I guess you don't know what the price is going to be for that specific product. But the honey one is different because it's a different product. So we'll have to talk about that in Mirat Hashem tomorrow. Okay. I think Shir tomorrow is at 6. If I remember correctly. 6:15, I mean.